Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Karen Edgett. Karen is a visionary artist and a foodie. She works across many mediums, following where her consciousness guides her to express wisdom and creativity as it flows through her. She has been studying metaphysics and its applications for several decades and has established connections to many of the dimensions that are beyond our normal lives to augment her life and creativity. She is able to communicate with higher selves, sort through Akashic records, hear wisdom from others, beings such as animals and flowers and even food. Her art is appreciated for its magical qualities that help raise the vibrational energy of the spaces it inhabits and for those that spend time with it. She often paints with symbols and poetic phrases to unwind old patterns and unleash new ones. Her art is one of the many catalysts for ushering in changes taking place in the collective awareness. Food has been a big part of her personal wellness journey, and she attributes it in part to assisting in wellness as well as her spiritual connection she uses to create her art. She has many recipes posted in her blog that are healthy, tasty, and assist in opening intuition and spiritual connections. Karen published her first divinely inspired recipe book called Garlic Lover Dressings in January of 2025. It is a collection of seasonal dressings using activated garlic that are flavorful, packed with nutrition, and the potential to assist your awakening journey. Karen, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for some time now.
Oh, thank you. Me too. And thank you for that lengthy intro. I'm not sure. I do so many things. It gets a little confusing to me sometimes too.
Yeah, and I cut out a little bit of your bio for time's sake, but your full bio will be in the episode notes along with your contact information. So,
all right. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And we met, I believe it was through Noemi Barris, who is a podcast agent. We had a really great pre-chat. I love Noemi because she has this knack for matching the right podcast guest with the right podcast host. And we had a great conversation, and here we are today.
Yeah. It's been a while. Actually, when I was done with the first conversation, I was like, I want to talk to him more often.
Yeah, I think it's been just about 4 months from pre-chat to scheduling the recordings. Mm-hmm. My first question for you, Karen, is tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Well, I'm going to try to do the short version, but I was born into a fairly, what seemed like, at least to me, a normal family. I had very creative parents. We valued the water and the nature and spent a lot of time outdoors, which I thought was really cool. I had a special needs brother who got very sick early on when I was a young baby. And I think that also the trauma of that episode kind of shaped my connection to everything. He had had a lot of bad medical care, and I'm sure the doctors were trying to do the best they could, but they made a lot of mistakes, and he remained severely handicapped the rest of his life. And a lot of that growing up with him and how that affected my parents and how that affected me, I think shaped a lot of my formative years as well. And I had a lot of things that were driving me to do things differently. And it was like that sort of tragedy was always looked at as a blessing, but it was also never talked about. And you juxtapose that against a fairly normal family in that's supposed to be normal in every other way, and you don't know where you fit. I ended up getting very ill over time, and myself, and I finally stumbled on some doctors who were alternative doctors in the whole wellness modalities that were alternative. And they were like, oh yeah, we can help you. And they started, you know, doing this and that and teaching me about things. And I was like, look at this. Here I am going from thinking I'm going to die to thinking I'm going to live to 90 or 100. So, and it's been really an interesting journey, but it's taking me completely out of the mainstream. And at the same time, I have a foot in the mainstream because of my normal upbringing. I have this other side of me that just loves the whole, you know, quantum field, the mystical field, the alternative wellness field. For me, that's my placebo. If it's working or not is irrelevant because I feel great. So the path led me, I had to learn how to eat. And I got a certification in nutritional cooking. Also, somewhere in there, I decided I wanted to be a foster parent. So I took care of kids. I'm not 100% sure why I was guided to do that, but I have a lovely daughter type person that I met through that that's been with me my whole life and will be now. I always love the creative field. I love the fact that you're allowed to be metaphysical in that. You're allowed to channel within the creative field and come up with ideas. I've always loved communication. I got into graphic design so I could make money, and I ran an ad agency for 20 years. And so I've had a lot of experience at different things. But what really makes me happy is when I can create things and co-create things with the universe, you know, manifest things together. So if I'm creating a painting or working with food, I'm co-creating with the energy of that. You know, the painting, it's not yet revealed. With food, it's often revealed, but you don't have where it's going to end up yet and what's going to come together. And I just find, even though I have a background in nutritional cooking, I find it much more interesting to me to look at the energetic signature of food and how that opens up our spiritual channels and how that nourishes us. You know, the nutrition is exciting too, because it's helpful, but there is a whole spiritual energetic component that more and more people are talking about, which is also fun for me because my dialogue is allowed to be had out in the open now. It's really, I don't know, art, photography, food. For me, it's all like moving energy around. It's all shape-shifting energy. And it's all, I feel like every day we're here to expand our consciousness somehow. And whether you do it intentionally or not is up to you. But I create things that will help you do that. I don't think shifting your consciousness or expanding your consciousness is any different than learning how to walk or run. It's part of who we are as a human experience.
Well, yeah, part of the human experience, I think, is allowing our souls to grow within that human experience and to expand our consciousness as much as our soul contracts will let us do that. We have to be open to that experience as well, because, you know, the human experience by itself can be very painful. And
it can be, starting with birth.
Absolutely. So it's just a matter of committing to awareness and committing to evolving in this incarnation of ourselves as much as we can before we go on to our next adventure.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, a lot of people have it when they're kids. You know, you see kids talking to the spirits or just running free in joy all the time. And as we get older, we kind of lose it through all our to-do lists and our educational lists and stuff. And when you have later in life, it's like you have to bring it back in because you find that you're empty. Part of you is empty, and that's because, you know, you worked on everything but your soul or your heart's desires. There's a lot of confusion out there too about what do you do, where do you go. It's like everybody's slightly different, so there's just so many ways to look at this and so many ways to enter it into, and so many levels that you can go, just a little bit or a lot. You know, the key is to stay centered in your heart. Your heart guides everything. If you let your brain guide it, your brain is a little, it's a little susceptible to misinformation or truths that need to change, or untruths that are presented as truths, you know, but the heart really knows the difference. So a lot of the work is coming back to really knowing your own heart.
You know, I think it's a good point, Karen, that you mentioned about the brain, because a lot of times our self-talk can get in the way of what our heart's trying to tell us. And, you know, the things that we believe in ourselves may cause us not to trust what our heart is trying to tell us, or may in turn not allow us to trust our intuition fully.
Right. Absolutely. We've basically, society tells us to doubt our inner knowings from day one. So you don't beat yourself up for doubting yourself, but that doubting comes from the brain and it comes from external forces. And, you know, it's like when you tell a little kid, don't talk to strangers. What you really mean is be aware, be safe, because we all know that the strangers aren't as big a problem as the own family members half the time, or teachers or whatever. Mm-hmm. But defining someone as just a stranger instead of a good person or a bad person makes you doubt your own inner knowing. Because kids will often be like, well, I don't want to talk to them. And you're like, look them in the eye and talk to them. But you don't teach them to handle why they don't want to talk about it to them. It's so you learn to doubt yourself right from day one. And then you sort of take it on as, you know, continue the rest of your life. So it's good to separate, understand how to separate what's coming from your head and what's coming from your heart. And that's where a lot of the metaphysical trainings can help. Or spiritual trainings. I mean, actually, all the religions teach you that, too. They just also teach you the opposite, to doubt yourself. So you have to be careful what you choose from the religions.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, religious practices subscribe to a specific dogma. And, you know, in order to be a part of that religious group, you have to engage in their specific practices, which are based on dogma. With spirituality, it's more individualized. You know, there's a lot of ways, a lot of paths of spiritual knowing. We just need to pick the path that resonates with us the most.
Right. And actually, the more spiritual you get with your inner knowing and in a metaphysical way, the more you can see how there's benefits to the religious institutions. And you can see what clearly fits better and what needs to evolve, and not necessarily, you know, attach yourself to what needs to evolve.
Now, Karen, for our viewers who might not know what metaphysics is, can you give an overview of what metaphysical phenomena are?
I think I'm just going to give you like what comes to me. I'm not going to give you the dictionary definition, but physics is the understanding of the interrelationship of everything. Metaphysics brings in the multidimensionality of that. So how metaphysics is like, how does an angel have anything to do with flying to Tahiti, you know? Mm-hmm. And the metaphysical part would, if you bring a bunch of angels with you, maybe the flight will be safer, you know, or you'll get more drinks served to you. It's like combining the spirituality of everything with everyday life. That's the way I would like to describe it. So you're not just thinking about what's already formed. So energy, which we kind of know everything's energy right now, right? Mm-hmm. That's what quantum physics has taught us. It's, you know, 120, 30 years into our understanding of quantum physics, and we're still unpacking it. But all this energy is constantly in a state of shifting and changing. You know, if it's in the form of a tree, it's changing, obviously, or a flower or something like that. But if it's a table in front of you, it's still slowly decaying. You know, and it's still energy, even though it's in a solid form, that a tree and a human made together. And the metaphysics part is the part that says, you know, I want a table. You know, that's the creative thing that causes you to want to form something, you know, and that soul that says, hey, I'd love to have a little table that looks like this and follow your heart, make it. You know, that's the metaphysical part about the physical part of actually making the table, you know, which is the more mechanical side. So you always have this ebb and flow of creation and form, and the metaphysical part is really the creation part, but it's bringing in the entire universe. Universe is probably a wrong word, but all the realms that we don't know yet. And many we do know, but we don't know them that well, you know, because they're outside our form, you know, consciousness.
So it's kind of like the integration of other worlds with the physical world to create a greater sense of awareness about ourselves and the world around us.
Absolutely. That's a more succinct way to look at it. But yes, it's all that isn't like something you can knock on.
Well, thank you for that explanation, too, because I never like to assume that my audience knows what specific terminology means. So thank you for giving a really, really good detailed explanation of how metaphysics works.
Oh, thank you. I try. There's probably many people out there who can get it in a 30 word speech or a 30 second elevator speech better than me, but it works.
Yeah, it's whatever works, and it's that whatever form of expression works best for you. Now, Karen, you've described yourself as a visionary artist. What is actually a visionary artist, and how does what you do align with or differ from other forms of artistic expression?
Well, as a visionary artist, I think it was a word I heard describing someone that is always creating outside the box that everybody else is creating in. And that's how I describe myself. So you look at this print back here of this passion flower. Mm-hmm. It is just a passion flower, but you used a macro lens and I'm out walking and the flower will start to speak to me. And I have to go over to it. I'm having a conversation with it. I get in close. The wisdom I've garnered from the flower is helping the flower create a whole little bit of new consciousness. So it's at a very high vibrating rate. And so for me to be like a visionary artist, I have to be able to envision that happening in order to capture that picture, make it into a print. And that's really all that makes me a visionary artist. I don't find myself fitting into an exact box of like an abstract artist or a avant-garde artist or something like that, because I feel like I see something and I have to go in that direction, or I sense it, or it's coming through like channeled information and I have to kind of follow it, because honestly, I'm not a flower photographer. And here I am taking thousands of pictures of the consciousness of flowers. And other people might say, oh, you're just taking macro images. And I'm like, not really. This is a piece of consciousness here that shifted fairly recently. And anybody who gazes upon it actually has the capacity to, you know, receive that shifting consciousness. And that's why I call myself a visionary artist. So when I'm creating a painting, I'm also co-creating with the realms that are out there and other forces that are there with me. And I feel like they're giving me some consciousness shift that's going to affect myself when I'm doing it, you know, others when they look at it. I think artists in general have done that, especially when they're not painting like everyone else. Like a Van Gogh is a great example. That Starry Night, the energy has been measured coming off of that as a really high vibrating energy. And so I would call him a visionary artist. Now, I'm not putting myself in the same category as Van Gogh, but 100 years from now when I'm dead, who knows? Maybe someone else will.
Maybe your visionary art will sell for millions and millions of dollars and take care of your ancestors for generations to come.
That's true. That's been a really nice story for a lot of the ancestors of the great artists. So I don't think you have to pick a particular style, but I would call like Andy Warhol, who kind of upset the art world with new stuff, a visionary artist. I think somebody who paints a picture of a dog is kind of painting the past. So the dog picture may be beautiful. It may evoke all these warm feelings and it may make people feel really good. So it's not there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing bad. You know, it still may be a very great contribution to the world, but there's a difference between painting something from the past and looking at something that's happening for the future or for now and with the intention of actually shifting the energy into something more expansive. Yeah. And I don't know if you can see that, but that's one of my paintings. It's not very well lit because we have a very dark, cloudy day here today, but it's a painting, you know, I call it solar light. Basically, it's a painting of shifting consciousness.
I see the infinity symbol.
Oh, yeah. Well, the infinity's in there. I did a whole series where I was unleashing the infinity to give it, to see where it would take us. I have lots and lots of pictures of infinities, and I have this book I put together of all the poems I wrote with the infinity symbols, and I just had a whole lot of fun. This one's soul, but this one says, I am immersed in calm waters.
Yeah, and water's a conduit for spirit as well, too, from what I understand.
Oh, it's constantly shifting and changing. And so it repairs itself so easily, energetically, too.
And for those of you who will see this podcast on YouTube, you'll be able to see the art that Karen is alluding to. And yeah, I wanted to just step back for a second. And when you mentioned that the flowers talk to you, and I think that that's really important because there are a lot of indigenous cultures, and I know Native American tribal cultures, they believe that everything has a spirit. Everything has something to teach us. Everything has a consciousness. This includes the trees, flowers, water, rocks that we can align with and gain wisdom from. So, and I firmly believe that as well, too. I mean, there's a lot of elements of nature that are calming, that are informative, and that can help, you know, spark our own inner awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a friend who had a fun lobster story where the lobster started speaking to her and said, hey, we got to eat some lobsters because the lobsters are, the lobsters are like, they picked up this new consciousness and they're ready to share it right now. And it was a lot of water consciousness that's shifting. The science has gotten these really great measuring tools now, and they pretty much know that if you are good to water, you know, water forms beautiful crystals. If you're bad to it, it forms bad crystals. And, you know, it has this consciousness. There's a great book called Light Eaters that's about the consciousness of plants and how it's different than our consciousness. And really to respect it and understand it, we have to kind of let go of some of our understandings of consciousness. But they really talk about how if a leaf is cut, you can see all these little molecules going to the leaf to fix it, to repair it. And it's definitely a consciousness thing. And it's interesting to see that flowers, they can now measure the energy field around flowers. And they've realized that bees buzz, their buzzing actually is like a positive charge, and the flowers have this negative charge. And when the bees buzz over the flowers, it actually loosens up the pollen and it just jumps right from the flowers onto the bees. And a lot of times they're just buzzing and then they collect and then they buzz some more and then they collect just by it kind of jumping onto them. It's a really interesting, fascinating science area, all these little instruments that can measure the light moving and the energy moving and see that it actually is being directed by something too. And it's like, you know, I don't know what causes. All I know with the flowers is they've told me they're taking some really interesting key points. They're taking the latest consciousness of the earth and the latest consciousness of the sun, and they carry no karma because they're not old. They're new every year. Like a tree is old, people are old, you know, the flowers are new. And they create this consciousness, which is a very high vibrating consciousness, and it's helping to shift the world. Yeah. And when they bloom, they often bloom in these big grids. And you could almost look at like a whole grid of wildflowers or a whole grid of daisies or buttercups, you know, and you could see the energy shifting just by those flowers. And that's why when you go and, you know, everybody loves to send flowers. Everybody loves to sit in flowers. Well, not everybody, but, you know. There's a lot to be. Anyway, they got all excited that I could see it and I was hearing them, and they're like, you got to take more pictures. You can't just be like flower essences and whatnot. You have to actually tell the people that you're not just energetically healing somebody with a type of flower, but you're actually shifting the consciousness of this world and plant more flowers.
And I think we're in a phase now, some astrologers have said that there's going to be a transition, a shift in consciousness where inclusivity, tolerance, and everything are going to be what rules the world instead of the polarization that we're seeing now. And I think this also started with the great conjunction of 2020 when Mars and Jupiter aligned to form the Christmas star. That hadn't happened in 2020 in over 450 years, which kind of signaled the beginning of a shift to the age of Aquarius. And I think the fact that you're alluding to the shift in consciousness that you got in terms of communicating with, you know, the flowers and nature is just further validation that this is where we're going. And these shifts take time, but it's in the process of moving towards that, I think.
Somebody once told me, and it's hard to find validation on this, but somebody once told me that the original etymology of the word apocalypse was about an era of extreme change, not the end of times, but it would be the end of one era and another. So the apocalyptic thing could be the moving into the Aquarius, but also the advent of quantum physics began it, in my opinion, the acceptance of that, because that's when you really started to merge back in science and spirituality. And when the two are back together, then we have the potential for a much more equitable and balanced society. And you can see the signs of more inclusivity, and people are moving around the world all the time. And yes, we have hiccups, you know, and people saying, pulling the reins back on that from time to time. But, you know, things are exponentially better than when I was born. And they're moving forward at rapid speed, almost too fast for some people, of course. And the people that are going to lose out are the people who don't like inclusivity and don't like equanimity in the end, you know.
Yeah, or the debunkers who will just dismiss anything that doesn't align with their worldview without further investigation. And for me, what's allowed me to continue to grow is realizing that there's a place for both science and spirituality, that the marriage of those two disciplines, those can create, I think, greater expansion of consciousness, greater critical thinking, and greater awareness of ourselves and the world around us, and can give more deeper and richer observations for behavior that may not typically could not typically be explained through science itself.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I always wish that when they were teaching me science, they would have said, well, this is a current understanding instead of a fact, because it would have aligned much better with what I knew in my heart science to actually be. And it also would open up more discussion about things. But I feel like you're right, and I feel like it happens so naturally now for young generations, and it's the older generations, the people like you and me, I'll put us in the same category. You might be lots younger than me, but for us that are stepping out and allowing that awareness, I think in the dialogue and putting it out there, I think it's helping too quite a bit. So I think that even though there's a little too much chaos and a little too much resistance right now, I think that, you know, this conversation we're having would have been harder to have even a decade ago. Because I've been working in this area for a long time. And when I started eating differently, all my friends are like, we're out. I don't want anything to do with you. And now everybody's like, I have lots of friends and lots of choices. And it's different how it's changed over the years.
Let's shift to that for a minute. I know you've talked about the energy of food and how specific food can open up our vibrational energy and enhance our intuition. Can you go more into that in terms of what foods are more helpful to enhancing our intuition and those that get in the way of that?
Well, just to plug my own book for a second, garlic has been used for spiritual awakening forever. And finding ways to put more garlic in your diet was really a great way to do that. I have a blog page on my website that says that's all about using garlic as penicillin. It's even been studied by NIH. So this is not necessarily woo-woo, but it's been used forever as an antibiotic. And it's a safe antibiotic in the sense that it doesn't kill off all the good bacteria with the bad bacteria. It's not like a general kill everything antibiotic. And so I've been writing about that for years and incorporating it into a lot of my recipes, but I have so many people that come and read that information that I put together this little book on how to do it and then how to make dressings out of it that you can use on salads or really anything. It's just a way to, like, you know, if you put a little bit of effort into it, you can start eating fresher garlic. You know, there's chemicals in garlic that when you crush it, they become the penicillin. It takes a little time to do that. So you just learn that technique and you can start using it more wisely and incorporating it more into your diet on a daily basis. And so garlic's number one. The rest of it comes down to, all right, this is, I don't want to offend anybody who's a solid meat eater, but plants, vegetables in particular, and greens, they are legumes. They're eating more organic. That's what they want you to know.
Mm-hmm.
They have more energy to give you if they're raised more organically. Say your grace to them. Thank everybody along the way, because that raises the vibration of yourself and the food that will help with your spirituality. The plants in particular are doing the same thing the flowers are, taking the fresh consciousness of the sun and the fresh consciousness of the earth, and they don't have a history. They don't have any karma. So they're higher vibrating in general. Eat more plants. Meat, fish, all that are suffering. Not every one of them, but they are a collective. Meat animals are a collective. Then you have the mini collectives, like cows are a collective versus lambs. And then you have, area collectives. And how they're raised and everything can be great, but they have karma. They're not always treated well. Their parents may not have been treated well, or lambs are treated great here but bad over there. And because they're part of this lamb collective, they share that karma. So their vibration is not as high as plants. So eat more plants. And if you're going to eat meat, bless it. Go into a state of grace. Grace is higher than gratitude, and it will help overcome all that. So grace is really key if you're going to eat food that is not considered. I mean, overly processed food doesn't have any good energy anymore. So you have to bless it to eat it. Yeah, give it some energy before you eat it, like the water that you can bless and it melts better crystals. The food's kind of the same way. So that blessing, that grace before a meal, is really important if you're eating, processed, fried, karma dense foods. Does that summarize it?
Yeah, that summarizes it perfectly. And I know I have a shamanistic holistic practitioner who I see regularly. And one time she put different food items in my hand just to see which food item aligned with my inner energy. And there were certain foods, when she put them in my hands, literally, the food that was draining my energy, my hand would drop. The food that was accelerating my energy would stay where it was or even elevate a little bit. When I read your bio about how you really talk about nutrition and how it can raise our vibrational energy, that experience that I had with my shamanistic holistic practitioner came to mind. And I wanted to really explore that with you a little bit.
Yeah, that's what they call kinesthetic testing or muscle testing. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. Someone just taught me a recent one where you can actually cup your hands in front of your heart and just ask your heart, is this going to expand me? Are beats going to be good for me? And if your arms go out, then they are. If they stay, I could ask right now, is the fried steak going to be good for me? Going to get any expansion? But you have to be calm in your brain to listen to your heart. So you have to maybe do some deep breathing first. But that's fabulous that she's helping you do that. And muscle testing, the arms, sometimes people teach how to test through the fingers.
Yep.
It's all because we have doubt, because we've been not listening to our heart, for so long that we have doubt. So the body will tell you, the heart will tell you, if you can find a way to reach out. That's awesome that she's doing that. So you can see and there's science that backs a lot of this. There's a movie called Game Changers. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's a docudrama on Netflix, and it's really all about the science of what we're talking about. Like, it shows the blood work, depending on what people are eating. And it proves that from a scientific standpoint, the plants will give you more energy by the blood work and the chemistry that they do through all of it. So it's kind of interesting.
People who have switched to a plant-based diet, they've told me that it's just made a world of difference in terms of their energy, in terms of their alertness, in terms of their well-being. So, and the science does support that. And in fact, a lot of science supports the validity of holistic practices in terms of improving physical and mental well-being as well, too. So there needs to be a time now where we just merge the best of both worlds to increase greater understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
I think it's happening. I mean, dialogues like this, here's a picture for those on YouTube of my little cookbook. garlic lover dressings. And it's really just, you know, it's just really all about creating the recipe for a sweet persimmon dressing. Mm-hmm. It's creating dressings that have high amounts of garlic in them, crushed garlic, so that it's actually probiotic rich, but it's also combining other things with high levels of antioxidants and but high energy, you know, taking things that are very fresh to make your salad dressings. It doesn't have to be on salads. I have one friend who's making the ginger shallot one, and she said, have you tried any of the others yet? And she's like, no, we make that every day, put it on everything. So she's getting something nutritionally out of that that's really beneficial to her. And when she's done, she might try another recipe or, you know, but it's true. I think what you're saying we have to do is happening. There was been a lot of efforts over the years. I don't really follow any of this anymore, partly because I don't follow the news too much, but there's was a lot of pushback from the pharma FDA on the vitamins supplements, mm-hmm. you know, because they were probably, maybe the FDA was honestly concerned about the actual validity of the labeling and stuff like that. But what I kind of learned is that, you know, there's hundreds of millions of alternative wellness practitioners and compounders and people dabbling in this. So it's hard to shut it down. It's not like a big corporation. And because it's not a big corporation also, it can be very responsive to the marketplace, mm-hmm. you know, and it can pop up the need, you know, and the need is there, you know, the resource will pop up. And they weren't successful in, you know, over-regulating that, which there's nothing wrong with regulating it. It's just to a certain degree, there's always that cutoff point where you actually kill the whole movement. But I think you've got a whole system, the healthcare system is too expensive for and too rigid for a lot of people. And you've got the homeschoolers that want to do the health in their own path and for their kids, you know, and that's like growing like leaps and bounds. And that's how things work, though. The evolution always comes from the ground up, never comes from the top down. People have to realize that we are the change we want to be. Yep. And we have the power, you know. Anybody tells you differently, then, you know, just turn the knob and turn them off.
Oh, absolutely. We have the power to choose, you know, what philosophies we're going to believe in, which people we will choose to listen to or bring into our circle. The right to self-determine has been something that's been ingrained and inherent in us since we were born. And we need to be able to empower ourselves to make those decisions. But I agree. I think we're coming to a more integrative framework. I've seen this in my own life where I take the best of what Western medicine has to offer with complementary practices, and I integrate that into a whole system of overall health for myself. And I think that wave is beginning, and I think it will continue. And it is. It's going to start from the ground up. It's going to be a grassroots effort. Like most change in our society has been a grassroots effort. So,
right. Well, all necessary change is. And I have to say to people, you know, whatever you can do to be completely in your heart is going to help you discern who to listen to. Because, you know, when you get online, which is where a lot of us connect and find other resources, here comes Ollie. It's time.
That's one of your cats, Ollie, correct?
Yeah, this is Ollie. He wants to be on the podcast now. What are you telling us, Ollie?
Ollie can be on whatever podcast he wants. I mean, he could even make a separate guest appearance, and I'm sure we'd have a great conversation.
Yeah, he'd probably like that. He's a Tonkinese, and he likes to think that he's actually human. So whenever I have a guest, he immediately jumps on the tables, which he doesn't normally do, so he can be at eye level.
Yeah. For those who are only listening to this podcast, Ollie is 100% Siamese cat.
Oh, he's Tonkinese, which makes him half Siamese and half Burmese, which is even worse than a Siamese cat. He's got their claim to fame is they have a personality of a dog.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I've been a cat person all my life, so My wife. So Ollie and your other cat is, what's her name?
Her name is Ellie, and okay. I have Ollie and Ellie. Yeah. Oliver and Eleanor. She's a tortoiseshell calico. They were both rescues, and they're good friends with each other. But they always stay in the room when I do a podcast. So,
Karen, we're just about coming to the end of our time and could talk to you for about another hour. But we'll have to do a follow-up in the future, I believe. One of my last questions for you is, if you could leave our listeners with just one takeaway today, what would that be?
I would say, spend more time in your heart. Spend more time loving yourself, loving others, standing at a waterfall of love, in a meditative moment, on a walk. It doesn't matter. Just let your heart be loved. I think the world is moving to where we're going to lead through our hearts. There's science that proves that the information comes and goes first from our heart, then to our brain. So know that this is what's most important. I think a lot of people do know that, but we also get busy and we don't take the time to nourish our heart and just love our own heart.
Yeah. I mean, if we don't have self-love, it's hard to love anybody else or anything around us. So we have to really take that heart-centered approach and love our own hearts before we can be compassionate and hold space for another's heart.
Yeah, I think you probably have seen this a lot in your practice. That if somebody's mad at somebody, then there's something inside of them that needs mm-hmm. to be healed and right. loved. And then the external irritation will dissipate.
Yep.
So it's really all an opportunity to go right there.
You got it. Very well said. And Karen, if individuals, my audience, wants to purchase your books, find out more about your art, what's the best way for them to do that?
For right now, just go to my website. It's my name, Karen Edgett, karineedgett.art.com. I guess it'll be in the notes of this one. And they can, if I'm in the Washington, D.C. area, so they can come by and meet me and see my stuff here, or I have a studio in my home now, or just talk to me online or purchase it online. There's links to other places to purchase things of mine as well. But yeah, I'd love to hear from some of your audience.
And I would encourage them to get in touch with you and find out more about your work. Just have a conversation with you. I think it would be fun. It would be enlightening and eye-opening.
Thank you. And thank you, Dave. Thank you for all that you do. And thank you for having me on your podcast.
It was a pleasure having you today as a guest contributor, Karen. And like I said, we need to do a follow-up in the future.
I'm right here.
Sounds good. And all with right. That is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.